What's up, guys? It's Matt and Leslie back at Table 40. Today, we got Brendan and Martha Hansen. Brendan is a six-time medal-winning swimmer. That's in the Olympics, the real Olympics. Three gold medals. And
a lot of other medals.
I was looking at his Wikipedia page. And first of all, I want to ask, where do you keep all those?
I have no idea where they are, Matt.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. I know where my Olympic medals are, but as far as when I do these and they're like, yeah, you've won all these international medals, I'm like, I probably should find them.
So, also, is the Olympic medal, are they real gold?
They're gold plated. So always have an inner in something in the inside. The gold is, they're legit heavy, but the gold ones are really soft. And that's why when you bite them, you put your teeth mark in them. That's kind of how you mark your own metal. But yeah, most of them are, I've told kids that they're solid gold, but that's just a lot.
It's not true.
I'm like, that thing is solid gold. It's not, unfortunately.
it does have to be like a certain percentage of gold to be an Olympic medal. And like the bronze has to have a certain percentage of bronze, and same with silver. But I think they're like nickel on the inside.
So you know where those three are, which are, where are they?
They're in the safe outside with all of our important financial stuff, and guns and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other ones are just scattered along the trail of where you guys have lived and family, and just scattered.
Yeah. I think
they're in boxes.
They're probably in boxes and attics, and yeah.
Sweet. Yep. So I have a question about swimming. So I was just thinking about that. When you talk about Olympic swimming, and you were on relay teams, right? So it's more like team sport kind of a feel. But I was thinking about, like, when you go into the Olympics, it only happens once every 4 years. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, the pressure of only getting to, like, you practice and you work for the once every 4 years. What is your mental state leading up to, like, a relay where you, like, your boys are kind of counting on you? Like, is there a different, as opposed to individual, like how you feel about letting your teammates down? I always felt like, to me, the hardest part about team sports was when you let your teammates down. Like, that was the part that bothered me the most. Like, if I didn't do well, it bothered me, but not like if there's bases loaded in a big spot and I strike out. Like, that, it hurt me because I was letting my teammates down. I was just curious, like, the difference between a relay maybe and an individual race.
Sure. It's funny you say that, 'cause it's totally different. To some extent, I would say that, like, the individual aspect of the approach to the Olympics is, it's very similar to you making a run for the World Series. You get up on the blocks and you think about, or you get up there to take a bat and you think about the entire approach to get to that spot and that chance to make that impact for your team, the crowd, whatever it may be, the country for my instance. But, like, when you go up there in a relay, it's like a party. I mean, you're going up there and, you know, your lineup is legit, right? Like, you go up there and you're like, okay, the guy going in the water behind me is the most decorated athlete of all time in the Olympics. You're like, this is going to be
good.
Yeah. So there's like it's like 4X the confidence level that you go up there with, where when you go up there by yourself in an individual race, it's very, you're very exposed. It's just you. You completely control the outcome of what you're capable of doing in that, you know, 59 seconds. Right. And where the relays, it tends to be less pressure once you put on yourself, because you can make mistakes, or you know that somebody's going to hop in the water and that person's the best from the United States, right? So I would say it probably flip-flops what you kind of experience as far as, like, that game-breaking moment where you don't want to let your team down. This was an opportunity where we're like, this is awesome. Like, let's just go there.
We're going to win.
You know? Like, we're like, and you knew you were on the best team and you walked out there and everybody was watching you. There was a much more lax feel to it and way more fun.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit. And
sorry, I just jumped right into
the gold
medals.
You just jumped right into that because
I was thinking about that.
So excited to talk to Brendan about this today, because this kind of deviates from the other athletes that we've, in their wives that we've spoken to. It's mainly been hockey and football and baseball. And so we were thinking about, okay, how can we expand our athletes and get different stories from different sports and whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, my cousin's married to an Olympic athlete and they both were athletes at the University of Texas. And so let's go back to where Martha and Brendan met. So how did you guys meet?
Well, hold on. I do want to say that if I start the conversation, you're going to get a different answer. If Martha starts it,
well, let's start with Martha.
Yeah. All right, go for it, babe. You got it.
Whose is more entertaining?
Probably hers. She knows the facts, and then if I say it, she'll say, "That's not true. It's not what happened." But I just, you know, I tell the story so many times. I like to add.
It's the difference between a girl and a guy. Of college age.
Sure. Go for it. Tell them the story.
The story. I mean, so we were both freshmen. We were both the same year in school. And our freshman year, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. So the first half of the year, really, I would go to school. I would go to swim practice. And then most nights I would go home because it was 10 minutes away. And so I wasn't really involved in like the bonding of the freshman class, but I lived with freshmen and I knew everybody. But my roommate was really like closer to the guys and the other girls than I was. And so I just remember, I didn't hang out very often, but this one time I walked into Brendan's dorm room. And so backtracking a little bit further, Brendan went to 3 Olympics, but the 2000 Olympics was going on when we started college in Sydney. And Brendan got third in 2 events, which means like third place is the first loser. You don't make the Olympic team. And sorry.
You're doing a great job.
And, and
so I'm so proud of you.
He had missed making the Olympic team by hundreds of a second combined in these 2 events. So he comes into college. He didn't care about girls. He didn't care about anything. Like, he comes in, he's swimming on the best team. They just won a national title. He walks into being their breaststroker. They didn't have a breaststroker. And so he's walking in ready to prove himself, ready to get better and ready to like set his eyes on the next 4 years. Cause that's his mentality, right? He's this Olympic athlete. And so I walk into his dorm room and I'm with my roommates. They're like, "Oh, this is Brendan." And he's like putting together a pair of goggles. And like back, you know, when we swim, you had to like tie goggles together and like fit them to your face and all this stuff. And I don't even remember the whole context. Maybe you can remember, but I just remember him saying like, "I'm going to break a world record in these goggles." And I'm like, "Who does this guy think he is?" "Oh, okay. Yeah. Go break a world record."
Yeah, I didn't even know anybody was in the room. I felt like I was cheated from those 2000 Olympics just because I prepared myself so much for those trials and then coming off of them, going to the University of Texas, like any of my teammates would tell you, I was a man on a mission. So there was nobody, there was no social life for me. It was very unbalanced. We can talk about that later. But when I remember you guys had all walked in, you were all dolled up, ready to go downtown or go to a party and stuff like that. And you guys were like, "You guys coming?" And I was like, "I'm making goggles, man. I'm going to bring goggles." And she was like, "Yeah, cool." And like walked out. And I was like, that was our first like face to face.
Yeah, that was like my first impression. And then my second impression was right before we went home for Christmas break, he was actually dating my sweet mate. And so my first impression is like, I had come home from going to like a fraternity party with a high school friend, not home, back to the dorm. And we both got there at the same time. And so I walked in with Brendan and my sweet mate. And he's like, "Hey, why don't you like come hang out with us?" And I'm like, "No, that's really weird. Like, you guys have been on a date."
Let's just say the sweet mate thing wasn't working out. And I was like, "Hey, why don't you come hang out with us? Because this is really awkward right now between the two of us." I was trying to coax her in a third party. Or third wheel kind of conversation. But
so that was like before Christmas break. And then the men's team came back before the women's team, like a couple days after Christmas break. So say like 2-3 weeks later. And obviously I was in town because I lived in Austin. And Brendan called like when he got back into town and we hung out that night. And just kind of evolved from there.
I will say that like, great people sneak up on you. They don't necessarily come waving at you and whatnot. And I think that's what we both did to each other. Like it was very organic. It was not like I met her in a bar or, you know, I saw her on the pool deck and was like, "Oh my gosh." Like, you know, it was one of those moments. I did say that though, by the way. Don't, I just remember it being me wanting to hang out with this person because I felt like they were going to make my life better and like be around that person. And I remember wanting to go home back to PA after being in Texas for a while and saying, can I call you while I'm home? And she's like, yeah, of course you can. And I was like, can I call you my girlfriend? You know, like it was that, or like, but I was very socially awkward, spent most of my life in staring at a black line on the bottom of the pool. So I was real good at swimming, but not very good at this part of my life. But I'll say that I think that was like the foundation that started everything for us, was that it wasn't forced. It wasn't like we were trying to make something out of nothing. It just kind of fell into our laps. And we were both like, we genuinely enjoyed each other early on. From a company, like I would just say from a sheer, we're
just yeah. really good friends.
That and Dr. Pepper. We love both of those things very much.
And breakfast tacos.
And breakfast tacos.
Breakfast tacos and Dr.
Yeah, it was just easy, right? Like there was no, I mean, we were both in our 18, 19, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, y'all know, I mean, it's like the same age. We just didn't get married.
Yeah. We didn't get married when you were like 19 and 20.
Yeah. But I will say, like, it was funny because I think our families knew there was something there before we did, right? Like if you asked Martha's mom, Kay or Jim, they were like, okay, Martha's never talked about a guy like she's talking about Brennan. If my mom would say, or my dad would say, like, you lit up when your phone rang and it was Martha, right? And that's when I think you can't force these things sometimes. And they just, because again, I was laser focused on proving to the world that, you know, what happened a summer earlier was not who I was in the sport of swimming. It kind of happened organically, which to me is tough to tell people to be patient in that aspect of it, but I wouldn't have changed it for anything. I mean, when the first time Martha met me, she's like, he's cocky. All he cares about is swimming. Like, who is this guy? You know? And I was just like, man, this girl never wants to hang out with anybody. She's antisocial. I had no idea her mom was sick. Right. So our first interactions with each other were totally negative.
And totally wrong.
Thank you. Nice. You've never said that in the 20 years we've been married. You said I was not cocky. I'm so proud.
We've been married for 20 years.
Well, I feel like we have.
Okay, so Brendan, those goggles actually did win like a lot, right? And so that you put together in the dorm room. I mean, you had a pretty unbelievable college run at the University.
Yeah, it's funny because those goggles ended up being a symbol of what I was capable of doing. And I, after that holiday season, when I came back and Martha and I were talking, it was, as far as I was concerned, it was me and her and swimming. She was like my backbone for everything that I was doing moving forward. And I think that's one of the things I was missing in competing in 2000 was that real honest feedback and stability that no matter how I swam, it didn't matter. I was going to get feedback from her and she was going to be the same person no matter what. And I needed that so bad. And so many people do, and they don't realize it. But if you ask my teammates, they'd say that, yeah, when I was checked in on the pool deck or with the team, I was all in on them. But when I was outside of that, it was the world revolved around Martha, in my opinion.
Let's go back to, I'm just interested in like, how did you get into swimming? Was your dad or your mom into swimming? Like how did this swimming career start? And like, I don't know, I guess that discipline and it takes to be an Olympic swimmer, by the time you were 17 or 18 years old, you were almost an Olympic caliber athlete, or pretty much were. Like what kind of discipline, Dake, where'd that come from? Like, give me some of your background of, you know, having Jackson who's 16 and Ethan who's 13, like the discipline and where did that come from to be that, I guess, kind of athlete at such a young age?
Yeah, it started just as my parents putting us in learn to swim programs. We grew up in Philadelphia, so we would go to the Jersey Shore, the clean side. We would go to the Jersey Shore as kids growing up. And so my parents were like, we don't want to worry about you or be the kid getting pulled out by the lifeguard. So we were in learn to swim early on. I was the middle kid of three. I had an older brother and a little sister, and we were a very competitive family. We were the kind of family where my mom would say, you can't do this now. But my mom would say, like, you guys are going out on your bikes or whatever. Just be home when the sun gets to here and whatever. And we would just be out all the time, like outside playing wiffle ball, outside playing pickup football, street hockey, whatever it may be. We were outside doing it. And I took that competitiveness into a lot of things. And one of them was swimming early on, but, a lot of my coaches early on were like, this kid, wasn't very good technically, but more so it was like this X factor of, I'll do whatever it takes to win. Where other kids would make excuses along the way. And it was just innate. I can't sit here and toot my own horn and say whatever, but, there was just something about that, like, I'll find a way out of no way. And the best avenue for me to do that was through the medium of swimming. And so, and then as a kid growing up, I gravitated to that because that was a lot of my identity. And I liked the feeling of everything that would come of me using swimming to bring out that, like, fail to lose, you know, kind of mentality. So I did play a lot of sports growing up. My dad was a great athlete, wrestled for Nebraska, you know, kind of a sawed off little dude that could, you know, take down anybody. And then my mom was extremely active, but she was one of 10 and three of her brothers played NFL football. So the gene was there, right? Like, but my parents said, like, we just wanted to give you opportunity. You chose what you chose. And so it wasn't until I was about 15 that I think I realized that for me to take it to the level that I wanted to take it at, my parents always allowed me to make the decision on this area, but also were the guardrails along the way saying, you're kind of falling off, you know, you're not practicing enough or you're not doing this. They kind of guided me in the direction of what my goals were. It really happened, not by chance, but by just, I would say, that snowball rolling down the hill, right? They started with learn to swim. It moved into where a lot of my confidence came from, a lot of my identity came from. And then I wanted it more. It became like a drug where I was like, I got to get this. This is what I want. And, you know, 10 years after my first time doing a cannonball in the pool, I'm in an international meet, you know, getting third in the country. So it, I don't think there was ever a moment where I was like, I did watch the 96 Olympics and go, this is awesome. Like, you know, seeing people draped in the American flag and walking around, and it was in Atlanta. I was like, this is insane. But it wasn't the wow factor where I like looked at my dad and mom in the living room and just said, I want to go do that. It just kind of organically came to that. And I think that's a lot of the reason I had such a long career, right? Like, I was on the national team at the age of 16. My last Olympics was when I was 31. And I think because of the slow roll early on, it's probably why I was able to kind of stay mentally engaged through all those years.
All right. As a couple moving forward from you graduate and you go on and you pursue your journey as an Olympic athlete, and Martha, you're the rock that's holding this thing together, and you guys are conquering this and having tremendous success. Was there an older couple along the way that kind of helped you navigate this, or did you just sort of figure it out on your own as far as, you know, little things that go into being married to a professional athlete? And it's not like the Olympics are held at the same place every single time. And then all the other things in between. I think that's one thing that's misunderstood a lot of times when we talk to Olympic athletes is it's not just you show up every 4 years and compete. I mean, there are lots of things along the way in between those 4 years. And so I'm sure that it was a lifestyle that at first you're kind of like, what the heck, how am I going to do this? Because like you, I mean, you're my cousin. I know how you're raised. Dad, great job. Mom, great job. Austin, Texas, born and raised. I mean, and then you get married to Brennan. It's like, oh my gosh, we're traveling, we're moving, we're going, we're doing. And it's a lot to navigate, because that's what I found whenever I married Matt. And so did y'all have any mentors or any guidance, or did you just look at each other and say, let's do this?
You know, I mean, no, there's not like a person that's really standing out for me. I think where we were really lucky to grow together was that since I swam also, I didn't understand making an Olympic team because that wasn't my caliber, but I understood the discipline and what went into a season to be successful at your final meet. I mean, that's something that even though my final meet was nationals or NC2As, like, I still understood the preparation that went into it. I was just at a different level. So I think that really helped, just sort of knowing kind of what to expect. I think we both have very good relationships with Brendan's coach, like both their head coach and the assistant coach, Eddie and Chris, and their wives. And they didn't ever go through it as an athlete, but just to have those people, you know, when my parents couldn't come to meets or Brendan's parents couldn't come to meets, I always had Eddie and Eleanor, or I always had Chris and April. And like, I mean, I can remember like nationals in 2011 and like April and I would go run in the morning and then like Eleanor and I would go to the meet together. Like I always had someone there. So like I wasn't by myself, I guess, from like the wife end. It's a really interesting question because we just recently watched the Michael Phelps documentary on HBO. And I think Brendan hasn't swam in almost 8 years now, or like, yeah, right at 8 years, because it would have been the Olympics this summer. But I think there's still things that I'm learning, and there's still things that, and like your perspective changes, right? Your perspective changes with kids, or like, as you know yourself better. But talking through, the movie is about just like the mental aspect and like the roller coaster that is the Olympics. Like you're on this high and then you just crash, because unlike a baseball or a basketball or football, hockey, you have a season, right? With the Olympics, your sports are awesome for like 2 weeks and that's it every 4 years. And you're like a mega superstar for that period. And then you just go to nothing, and it's not funded, you know, it's not supported. And so just all the mental stuff that comes with that, I think like talking through that movie, I'm still trying to understand the mentality it takes to one, be at that level, because I was, like I said, I was never at that level. Sure, I swam at NQ2As, but like, it was never like part of who I was, I guess, on that level. And just talk about what we've talked about recently, because
no, here's the thing. It was not rainbows, butterflies and unicorns the whole time. Like everybody looks at these professional athletes and go, oh my God, that they live this extravagant life and it's going to be an amazing. And we do to an extent, right? Like, but there was a lot of times where I would bring what happened in workout or a major competition. I'd come home and I haven't seen her, and I would bring back whatever that competition had back into the household. And we had to deal with that a lot of the times. And so, you know, they always say, like, and I remember as a kid growing up, just you're only as strong as the woman that stands behind you or with you, right, the whole time. And she dealt with so much because she was my outlet for everything, right? Like, I wasn't like I was going to go to the media or I was going to go to my family, because she was the person that was my rock in all of this. And that's where it was. But when you talk about how we were able to kind of dodge and pivot and move through it all, it was a community. We surrounded ourselves with people that had the same values, that had the same beliefs, and that were real honest with us through the whole thing, because we tried to screw it up as many times. I mean, I know I did, right? Like, but then there's what people don't realize is that, like, as you go to these levels and you'll have these people that want to attach themselves to you, but they don't share the same things as you. And you're like, are they infringing on us? You know, it's like you have this core value and group of these two people trying to move through life. And then you have these people on the side, just like nibbling at it, trying to like pull at it. And I want that, give that to me. And I'm going to take it away. And it really tests you. It battle tests you early on. And that's why, like, I feel like now we're at the point where I'm like, man, nothing can break us because of the scars and not scars, but just the calluses that we have from that career. But then also, like, we had a really good conversation a couple of weeks ago, just around like the ebb and flow of the mental aspect of this, because we deal with it now. Like we get tired, and the kids and the family life, it's the same, I would say, challenges. Because my expectation level as a human being has not changed from when I was an Olympian to now being a father.
Right.
And so that's where I'm like, I'm failing. I got to get better at this. I'm better than this, you know? And I'm just like, relax. Why are you acting? So to the point where we had some benefit, because Martha grew up swimming and she knew the sport. So she understood it. But by all means, we grew together through it all. And that's probably the biggest thing is, and we did have role models along the way, but we had a lot of them, you know, and probably first and foremost were her mom and dad and my mom and dad. You know, they were very transparent with challenges that they had. And we realized that it wasn't going to be, you know, rainbows and butterflies and unicorns for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think? So retrospectively, looking back, and then we'll move forward to another topic. But looking back, what would you say, like as a young, so if you were to give advice to a younger couple, like a young Martha and Brendan, and what would you say to them, like as far as bringing things home and you know, dumping it all on Martha or whatever, like, you know, because I mean, we went through that too. Like, it's hard because this is your person and the job is very hard and you trust this person. And but at the same time, what would be a healthier way to do that, do you think?
Let me go first.
Sure.
Yeah, I think I never lost sight of the fact that Martha was trying to make me a better human being. And so we would fight. We would have moments where, and that was just her challenging me or me challenging her on the trajectory of our, of us moving forward, you know, and where it, we would sometimes sweat the small stuff when we probably shouldn't have. But the 10,000 foot view of our relationship was one where we never lost sight of the fact that I'm saying this, we're doing this, we're going through this mud, whatever it may be, these challenges and all that, because I want you to be better. And I know what you're capable of doing. And so I think when I looked at Martha, I saw the potential of somebody that I was like, I have to be with this person because she's going to make me better. But I just, she's an amazing person. I know where she's going to go. And I think that was somewhat of a mutual feeling. So a lot of times I think the best advice I can give is like, don't let surface stuff affect what your overall goal is. And like, there were challenges, right? Like I was on the road for 60 days or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, I never lost sight of the fact that this person was saying these things or doing these things. And all of her actions were because she cared about me and she wanted to see the potential of what she knew of me come out. And I just had to accept that. So a lot of this is listening and accepting and understanding that, and always never losing focus because things will challenge you. People, sponsorships, events, all that stuff will challenge it. But I think keeping that laser focused on the fact that why you even went down this journey in the first place is what you have to remember.
I second all of that. I think another thing that has been really good for us is to also make sure that like we know we're in this together, but that we know who we are separate also. And to have that respect for each other. Like, I mean, we are not perfect with this. I mean, we had this conversation about hunting the other day because Brendan loves hunting. And like, I have to remember that he needs that to be a good be the person that I need him to be in our relationship, that he needs to be like for himself. And so I think we just constantly have to remind ourselves like, okay, this is who I am. This is who you are, but like, this is who we are, and who we are is more important than anything else. But we can't lose focus of who we each are, because that's what makes us so great together.
Yeah, that's good. And that's what the Bible says too, right? There's a design that God has for men and for women, and individually we're going to kind of run parallel, but we're created to be one. Right. And so that's really good. I like it. All right. So you've been retired for what, 8 years now. And so, what's that been like? Tell us, because Matt, we just started this journey.
It's the hardest,
not easy.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I've raced in some of the toughest challenges. We have three little girls. You think that would be a challenge. That's nothing compared to this. And I think talk about accepting it. You go from being number one in your sport or being top 1%. Like everybody tells you, make it to the Olympics, you go, you know, if you're an MVP, all-star, whatever, you're the 1%er of 1%er. You broke all the algorithms, whatever. And then you go into the real world and it's, I'm going to say it's the real world because we lived in a fantasy world, right? But then you go into this real world and the world accepts you, but you don't necessarily accept it. And so you struggle with that ebb and flow back and forth where you're just like, one day you're like, crushed it. Yes. The next day you're like, I suck. I'm awful. Like, this is ridiculous, you know? And so that's where I think and then I have to teach myself patience. I have to teach myself to take it one day at a time, because, you know, what I built in the sport of swimming kind of skewed my mental outlook in respects to what I'm capable of doing outside of that. And I've tried to take the things that I've learned in swimming and bring it into my real life, in professional life, but it's not easy, because all of the gauges on our readout and our dashboard are different than everybody else's. And so when it reads out like everybody else's, I'm like, why am I in the red? I'm still in the red. Like, seriously, this is ridiculous. And I mean, it's a daily struggle, but what has helped me the most is just being real with it and voicing it, not bottling it up, not letting it get to me, and making sure that I have outlets. Like, I found that like being vulnerable has really helped me a lot in that aspect of just like, if I screw up in my job, I just say it, versus where when I would screw up in front of a bunch of people in a race, I would just be like, okay, it was internalized. And I'd be like, okay, how am I going to fix this? Tweak this, you know, the whole world didn't know I just did it. But now it's like, it's kind of, that's, those are the building blocks that have helped me, is just like the acceptance, the patience, and somewhat the vulnerability of doing this forward. But it is, I told Martha, she asked me the other night, she's like, if you could go back and not make the Olympic team at all, the amount of struggle that I've gone through in the last 8 months, I was like, I don't know how I would answer that right now, you know, because I look at my friends that didn't have the experiences that I had in the sport of swimming, and they're very successful businessmen, businesswomen. And I'm like, man, I idolize that now. And I'm like, that would be so awesome. But then I look back on my career, I'm like, I had so many crazy experiences at the same time. So you really struggle with that. The only way you get through it is by talking about it and really getting it out there. And again, like, just letting people that you work with understand that, you know? And I think that's where we're at now over the last like almost decade now, is just like, she realizes like, man, you're trying to mow the lawn for time. Like, what's the deal? Like, gotta win, man. Gotta win all the time. You know, it's competitive. Yeah. And she's just like, God, you don't let this go. And she knows how I'm wired. Right. So that's the nice thing about being with somebody we've been together for, you know, 20 years with dating and marriage. So
I think what's hard for me to watch is totally almost discrediting everything that's come before, you know, like I understand, but I don't understand, because I was never at the level he was, but like, I can understand going from number one to like, what do I do now? And the confusion that goes with that. But what's hard for me is when it seems as though like Brendan feels like he's starting at zero, because you're not starting at zero. You have more than the majority of people who are in the workforce who are successful. Like, what you have done, what the person who you are, that has made you able to accomplish the things that you have accomplished, those are skills that don't just apply to swimming or don't just apply to baseball. Like, that person can basically do whatever they want. They just have to figure out what they want to do next. Like, you're hardwired to be the best. And so how do you channel that into your next chapter of your life? And I think that's a really hard transition. But like, it's in you. You just have to let it out differently.
I played intramural basketball this past. So I had to check myself a couple times when the fraternity guys were getting my, like, I could feel the internal competition coming a little strong. I had to remind myself what I was doing, that it wasn't the NBA finals. And, you know, they'd run their mouth a little bit, and I'd catch that adrenaline going, and I'd take a time out here. I'm playing against 19-year-olds and, I get that the competitive spirit. I don't think we can ever we can satisfy it quite like we used to be able to. So I feel that.
And then you're coaching a little bit too, Brendan, right? And so what is that like to coach young men and young women and to help them along in their journey? And so what's that been like?
You know, it's, I think, I remember this quote, and it's by Jim Carrey, which is like not a great,
a great philosopher.
I know. Right. And I never forget it. And it's good. Cause there's a lot of like books and literature and things that I'll read on planes as I'm coming in. I have time to reflect on my life cause it's moving at 100 miles an hour. And so the one is, the greatest currency we have is our effect on other people. And so, When I left the sport, I felt like it was all about me, and I was getting up on the blocks and I was trying to accomplish these things, and I was trying to make, and I felt like I would be pleasing everyone in my community, my family, my Martha, everybody by performing at the highest level that I possibly could, but meeting my expectations. But when I left the sport, what has really helped me is feeling like it's time to serve. It's not about you anymore. Like, you've built this platform to stand on now, to now give a message, serve, be there for people, be the example, be the role model. So I don't take those moments with people, kids, coaches, athletes, ever lightly. And I see it as an opportunity. If I walk into a room or do a podcast or whatever, I'm going to try to leave that place better than when I found it. And that service role has really, has been where I probably have found the most joy. Because to Matt's point, I can't take away the competitiveness in me. Right. But when I turn on my service hat, it tends to dull down the competitiveness and allows me to connect with people and give them, I see a lot of joy, and I get a lot of joy from seeing somebody do something I never thought they were capable of doing because of how I guided them through that process or used my experiences in the sport or in relationships or whatever to help them get to where they can be. And that to me is addicting now. And so I just look at the fact that, and I keep telling myself, like, at the end of the day, it's not about what you did in your shoes. It's more of how you impacted the people around you while you were in those shoes. And that's really helped me kind of wrap my head around what I did in the sport of swimming, but also has allowed me a really guided path moving forward.
I like that. That's good. Okay. Well, the last thing I want to talk about is, so we really became friends in Higgins, Texas, which is this, I mean, you're going to have to like really look that up on the map, right? It's teeny tiny, getting smaller all the time. But so Martha and I's grandparents, mom and dad, we call them Martha and Esther, that we would all come together as a family, like every Christmas or Thanksgiving or however that shook out. And one of the memories I thought about when I was running and thinking through this conversation was the time that Esther, our grandpa, put on Brendan's Olympic medals and then Matt's World Series ring. And he was like super jacked about it. And it was really cute. And I texted your mom to see if we couldn't find that picture, because she's the one that seems to have all the great pictures. But just, what is y'all's take? And something I really want to convey in this podcast is just how important family is, and how important older members of our family is. And I know, like, Matt and I can confidently say that Martha and Esther shaped the way we do marriage and shaped the way that we raise kids and shape how we value cousins and how, and definitely our faith. They definitely modeled like a very consistent faith that wasn't, it wasn't all talk, man. It was action. It was just loving people steadily through their life and, family dinners and all of that stuff. I think that Matt and I grabbed hold of that as a young, impressionable couple. And we're like, man, someday I want to be like Martha and Esther. I want to grow old and I want all the kids and the cousins and everybody to come back to my house. And so they really mattered a lot to us. And I'm just curious if y'all felt the same way, like going there and hanging out, like what was your take on being in Higgins and chilling and having to do those ridiculous Christmas
pageants.
There it is.
And we don't really need to talk about that.
We'll give up videos that just in the link below.
We should find videos.
Oh, I just want to get that mini trampoline out. I know it. Y'all stuck landing back in 92.
Oh, gracious.
Look, that was, I'll tell you this. I grew up in a big family. We met, we would get together every Sunday for Sunday dinners. I mean, in the Northeast, that was growing up, a huge Italian family. That's the way we were. So This was like one of this huge pros for me with Martha when I first met her, was just the sheer amount of family aspect and how important that was to her. Because when you look at the longevity of when you see somebody like, man, I really click with this person, it's great. And then you see their value system and you saw family was always a top priority for her. It really hit home for me. And I don't want to speak for Matt, but like when I would walk in that house, I was immediately accepted as a family member. And that's the way I want my household to be. Like I want people that come in from the street or they want to come over for a dinner and immediately feel like they're part of the family. Investor did that immediately with me. And that's probably why, our relationship catapulted so fast into what it was, a lot of because of those experiences and those holidays where families tend to gravitate toward there, right? They gather together for holidays and whatnot, but, just the spades games and the different games, you know, it was just, there was a nice energy in that house that was totally, controlled by Vester and Martha. And I idolized that. And I thought that was, that's something that we strive every day to do in our household.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my parents are good about doing that also. I mean, for me, mom and dad are they're who I want to be. They're who I want to model my life and our life after, you know? I think it is also like, I'm big on like names and birthdays and like that being part of who you are. So like being named after mom is something that, I mean, it's probably one of the things that like I value most in my life is like, wow, how can I ever like live up to this name that I was given? Because she is like, I mean, my mom's right up there with her. Like when I think about who I want to be as like a mother and a leader and a woman, and those are the two people I want to be like, my mom and my grandmother. And so, they were everything. And one thing that like really struck out to like in my mind is when we were talking about like how to spend Christmas. Because Brendan's from Philadelphia. And obviously like we see my parents all the time because they live like 5 minutes away from us. And so just talking about how do you balance like Thanksgiving and Christmas? And like once girls started school and all that stuff. And Brendan was like, well, I want the girls to be in their house on Christmas Day. And I thought it for the first time in my life, like 30 years plus of life, I was like, we were never in our house on Christmas Day. Like we were always at mom and dad's, and it never even occurred to me that there was something wrong with that, because that's where we were supposed to be. That's where we were welcome. And it was family. And that's what was important. Not like where we were.
And Vester was, man, I remember sitting with Vester a couple of times in the living room, watching you play ball. And he literally, again, he was very transparent with the way he was. But man, the one thing I learned from him was, and maybe it's the cattle life, cattle rancher growing up in him, but he was always 100% present mm-hmm. in what he was doing in that moment. And when you were at bat, you couldn't even talk to the guy. Like he was just like, shh, straight one, this is a hitter's count, should be quiet, you know? And then I'm like, what are you doing, man? You're 82 years old. He'd sit there with his, you know, is your cap on, and he'd be just going. And I was just like, I love that. I love that about him, because he could have had a lot of excuses on why he could not be engaged with his family, trying to run a cattle ranch that's, you know, we all know can be ebb and flow crazy from one year to the next. But he always was 100% present with his family all the time. And even if you were playing ball somewhere else, man, I swear it was the funniest thing. It could be anybody else playing, but as soon as you got to bat, it was like the whole room had to shut up and watch. And it was like, it was really cool, man. But he left an impression on me, and he's been gone for what, 4 years, 5 years now?
Yeah.
And I still talk about it, and I still think about all of the experiences I have daily and how I could be a better person because of the times that the impressions he put on me. That's a powerful thing, you know?
Cool legacy, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was funny. It's not funny, but I heard this in a eulogy a little bit ago, and the only reason I share it because it is really sweet is that you die twice. You die when you leave this earth and go to heaven, and then the second time you die is when they stop saying your name. And I mean, I'll never stop saying Vester till my heart's still beating, or Martha for that matter, because of how they instilled my daily interactions with my kids, my wife, and the people that come into my house.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. And we're very appreciative. And I just want to encourage anybody that's listening that's on the older side of things, because I think our focus so far has been on the podcast is like, we've talked to younger people and like, what are they doing? And what are, you know, and I just think like as grandparents, the impression, like you just said, that they can leave on a generation, it's just really important. And I just want to really encourage like all of, you know, like my parents and Kay and Jim and Brendan, your parents, like they just really matter, and their voice really matters, and their presence really matters, and how they interact with us really matters. And it's never out of style or out of date. And I don't know, I was just thinking a lot about that and how my life is has been strongly affected by two old people like Martha and Vester.
Look, the biggest mistakes I ever made in my career, because in 2006, the summer of 2006, I broke the world record 6 times in 3 weeks. And to break the world record and wrap your head around trying to do something no one's ever done before, you think you have to do it yourself, and you put yourself on this island. And in 2005, that summer, I go into world championships trying to break the world record, and I fail miserably. I do well in the event, but I don't achieve the expectation I'd set out for myself. And that's when I realized that, like, you, no matter, the biggest mistakes you'll make in life is thinking that you can do it by yourself. And that's what I would tell the youth out there, is like, there are answers out there. If they're not our answers, there's people that are going to get you thinking along the right way to think that way. Vester didn't know anything about swimming or baseball, right? But your time spent with him, you're like, man, that was valuable. Like, I can take that into my team, the locker room, the dugout, the, you know, the practice, whatever it may be. And that's what those older folks that know what they're talking about, those experiences, if you can ask questions as a youth, you're going to excel so much faster and get closer to your goals, because we have a tendency as humans, especially those one percenters, to try and do it yourself. And that's where I just overexposed myself and made a complete idiot of myself in front of people, because I was like, I got this figured out. And when you say that, you're the most beatable person on the pool deck or on the mound, right? So I think that those experiences, if you ask questions of those people, of the Vesters and Marthas of the world, and we all have them in our lives, that's when you really can grow as a human being.
And adding on to that, I think one of the things that like we try to make decisions of, I mean, talking about like sending our kids back to school right now, like there's no learning that can take place in a school that can replace like my parents' relationship with my kids. And like there is a time limit on that, you know, and I have to take advantage of that while they're still here. And so I think another thing that's really important, I mean, in all areas, in our kids, in our marriage, in everything, is to let those people into your life. Like don't shut them out because, you know, they can't run around with you or whatever. Like just make sure you involve those people. Like I wish my girls knew mom and dad. Like, there's not a day that goes by that I'm like, I wish they would know them. But then it's my job to make sure that they know him through my parents and through the things that I tell them about. You know, I want my girls to know my parents. I want them to have that relationship. And that comes from being like so young, like when y'all lived in Higgins and like, you know, Steph and Cole were in Higgins, like we were the ones that weren't in Higgins. And we all laugh about like, oh my gosh, we were all like, mom, dad, why can't we move to Higgins? And we all like laugh about that because I mean,
why do you laugh? Because Higgins is like the population tiny of the Smiths.
Yeah. Okay. And like, but like that, we wanted to live in Higgins and we wanted to move to Higgins because that's where our grandparents were. And then I think about like, you know, we're still really close to Brendan's coach, Eddie, and his wife, Eleanor. And like, we take the girls over to swim at their pool, and just the relationship with them, like with Eddie and Eleanor and our girls, Kate, our youngest, she's named after Eddie, and just they have a different relationship, and just, there's nothing that can replace that. I think it's so important to let those people into your life, so they're influencing your kids and influencing you, because it's not, I mean, we're pushing 40, but
dang, you got to bring that up in the podcast.
But like we, They're older than we are. But
I'm 39, young 39.
But like, you think about that big picture, and you still have, like, we still have so much to learn about ourselves and about life. And like, I mean, I don't know. I'm a big lifelong learner. I don't think you can ever stop. And so I think that it's important to let those people in to teach you also.
That's good. All right. Anything for you?
No, thanks. Appreciate you guys coming on.
Yeah, this has been good. We miss you.
Thank you for listening to Table 40, part of the Sports Spectrum Podcast Network. For more stories on sports and faith, check out sportsspectrum.com.